It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And that microphone doesn't sound very good.
I don't think it's on. Oh, there we go.
There we go.
Right,
now
I'm still like Adam Van Wee.
And that proves one thing for sure. He's here.
I am live in studio.
So America's soccer dad took the day off. Well, took an hour off.
Truly, amazingly, we have zero soccer games this weekend.
But you either lost everything or won everything then.
Neither, just an anomaly.
Well, take advantage of it. Good fishing weather, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is really, truly more of a financial money show than fishing and soccer, although they're all great topics.
Yeah, it's too bad, actually.
Things that everybody cares a lot about. Anyway, I've got a lot to do this morning, but first I want to welcome everybody, the regulars. You always make our day by being out there, and hopefully we'll hear from some of you today. But if you're new to the show, either by accident or somebody told you about it and you wanted to check it out, then try to stick around for the hour. We always promise that you'll learn something. We never promise exactly how much it'll be worth to you, but I always go away from anything where I learn something thinking it's a net plus. Of course, some people are like me. They want to know everything there is to know about everything than to know about. It's a quest that will not ever be reached, but you can't stop trying. Anyway, very interesting week in the market, and we see now the end of the month, and whenever September shows up in your rearview mirror, it's kind of a sigh of relief.
That's usually good news.
It usually is.
Outside of, what was it, 2018, I believe, it's almost always good news.
Yeah, certainly it has its moments, plus and minus, but overall, it is the worst month in the market. Some of the biggest volatility happens now and in October, and we've seen the V word.
A bit of it, nothing outrageous.
Yeah, the funny part of it is, you know, we're still not acclimated to a couple of things, and one of them is how much volatility is usual and customary,
mm-hmm.
which has, after the Trump election, we skipped volatility for a year. But now it's starting to come back more normal. But the other thing that happened in that time is that the numbers got so big. So we used to look at a change in the Dow of 100, 150 and say, well, good day,
bad day,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And now 150 is what it does between 11 o'clock and 11:30 on a slow day.
Yeah, it's true. It's just the relative size of the moves are the same, but the numbers are different. So I think I'm getting acclimated to it. I don't really even raise an eyebrow for a 300 or 400 point drop anymore.
Exactly.
Not as much as I would have 5 years ago. Yep. So
five of them in a row.
Yeah.
That
then we start to worry. And we did see a little bit of a slide over the last few weeks, but mm-hmm. we reversed course a bit this week. If it hadn't been for Monday, we would have had a great week. But China, once again, reared its ugly head.
But at least now we know why.
What do you mean by that?
There's a reason that China was doing unpredictable things with no apparent motivation. And we finally figured out why. And it's because Xi has made a tactical move from being, I've been saying for 10 years, they're more capitalistic than we are. But he has now made an intentional move away from capitalism to his goal of pure socialism. And that's why some of these things are going on, and that is a scary thought.
Well, this week kind of bucked that trend, though. The problem this week was this big global 500 company that you've probably never heard of until maybe Sunday, called Evergrande, which is in financial trouble, and they're a huge property developer. They do projects worldwide, but mostly in China, and the scale
it's
of their
80
projects
or 90%
is massive.
China.
Yeah. I think they said 80% is the number I heard. And on Monday, this news dragged the market down. It did rebound some later in the day, but it was down substantially on Monday. Once the market digested all the information and came to the conclusion that this was not going to cause a 2007 Lehman Brothers style meltdown, the rest of the week was pretty positive. But there was a lot of worry that the financial contagion of an Evergrande bankruptcy per se would drag worldwide markets down, and then I think that once it was digested, that was determined not to would not happen.
But that wasn't the last thing to come out of China this week.
It was not. I'm going to get to that.
I figured you would.
Bit, but I did want to mention that the Dow posted a gain of 0.6%. S&P was up by a half, and the NASDAQ was almost perfectly flat, ending the index within about 8 points of where it ended last Friday. And we still have losses of about 1.5% on all three indexes for the month of September. But the quarter and the year are still very positive, and I will take that.
I will take that every single year.
I believe there's just four or five more trading days in the month. I think four, and then the next month, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, so, and for anybody who follows this kind of cyclic thing that we like to talk about, it will not be jobs week. That is the next week because it's too close to the end on Thursday.
Right. There was a lot of movement in interest rates over the last couple of weeks, which probably contributed to the volatility we've been seeing. It hasn't been in the direction that's favorable to stocks. The 10-year has climbed from 1.3 to 1.45% during that time, and the Fed also met this week to discuss their tapering plans. So that's a lot of things going on that could potentially negatively affect the market in the span of 2 weeks. And the Fed came out, and it doesn't sound like they're going to make a sudden policy shift, but rather a gradual reduction in asset purchases starting in November or possibly December of this year. Very different than rate hikes, which are forecast to start during the 2023 year, and the forecast is for four of them.
We'll see.
Yeah, and then three to four more in 2024. Obviously, this is very much subject to change based on conditions, but a 2% increase in rates over the next 3 years would substantially change market conditions. Some ways favorable, some ways not so favorable. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're going to be watching very closely in the coming years. So as you mentioned, the real estate issue wasn't the only havoc that China created this week, and you may be sensing a theme here. They also outlawed all cryptocurrency transactions in the country, which, as you might imagine, did not have a positive effect on the crypto markets.
And that was about a minute or two after one of the bigger crypto people in the country sold his $58 million worth.
Wow.
Just literally minutes before that announcement.
Yeah, this one's going to hurt for two reasons. One is obvious. China's a huge market for buyers of anything, including cryptocurrency. So if they're no longer allowed to use it, you took out over 1 billion people of potential consumers. And then the other one, not quite as obvious, is that a lot of the mining for crypto, it takes a huge amount of computing power, and a lot of that came from China. They sort of banned it earlier this year, but it was still going on, and now you have to wonder if they're going to ban it outright.
A lot of the miners moved, but a lot of them didn't go any further than Taiwan or Hong Kong.
Right.
And guess what Hong Kong and Taiwan are in the eyes of Xi?
Mine.
And I don't mean M-I-N-E as in mining. No, I mean like M-I-N-E as in mainland China.
Yeah.
And they did not move far enough. Who am I to tell them? It's going to be a little late now. It's just a big mess over there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back with a trivia question. We've got a few more things to wrap up in the market. I particularly want to talk about the number of layoffs and things like that that are going to impact over the next week or so. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. There are nearly 11 million jobs available in this country right at the moment. The number one demand is production and manufacturing sector. What sector has the second highest demand? That's the question.
Okay. Wow. Having some technical
difficulties. Excuse me, a minor eruption there in my throat.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about investor sentiment, which last week had a huge drop in bullish sentiment. And this week we saw a bit of a rebound in that. It rose to 30%. Bearish sentiment actually remained steady around 39%.
Yeah, that's the good news.
Yep. And so all of the increase came from people who were on the fence jumping into the bullish camp. So neutral sentiment dropped to 31%. So it's actually a pretty even mix with investors, with the majority being bearish, but not so much so that it's overwhelming. It's an interesting mix considering that the market was more or less flat this week. It went down and then it went up, and then the net effect was almost nothing. So the fact that so many people jumped into the bullish camp on that news, I it's a little hard to explain. I would have expected less movement.
I don't know. That sentiment number, the only thing we know about it for sure is that it doesn't work.
It works in reverse.
It works in reverse.
Yeah. So,
but what makes people swing wildly from bulls to bears and in-betweens, I have no idea.
No, I'm not sure either. Outside of sentiment, it was a pretty quiet week for economic data. The data actually came in with a perfect split, 8 beats and 8 misses, and then 3 that matched expectations. Housing data was the overwhelming positives or beats was from housing, and there were 5 of them. It was home builder sentiment, housing starts, building permits, mortgage applications, and new home sales all beat their expectations. So the housing market, despite what everyone keeps predicting, the imminent crash, which we do not believe will happen, it still looks very, very strong out there. The only one that disappointed was existing home sales, but it was so close to the forecast, it was pretty much spot on. So that miss, I don't even really consider it a miss. And then jobless claims spiked a little bit due to an increase in California, where Governor Moonbeam accepted his win in the recall election and said, basically, everything I've done is totally validated. All of my COVID policy that people can't stand, they love it. They reelected me, sort of. So
they're jealous of our success.
Exactly. So anyways, and that was met with a round of layoffs. So go figure. continuing claims also missed estimates and rose 200,000 from last week. Both manufacturing and services PMI missed expectations. And the last thing is, next week is a huge week for economic data. 39 reports scheduled to release. So we'll have a lot more to trade on next week. So watch out. We could end the month with a little more volatility.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Anyway, there was a lot of brouhaha on Thursday morning when the layoff number came out. And instead of being down like the so-called experts thought it should be, it was up 16,000. And out of all the experts I listened to and read about, which is a lot of them, they all sort of forgot one little thing. The week before, the comparison week, was a four-day week. And the unemployment offices where these numbers come from were only open 4 out of 5. So if there are 350, that's 70,000 a day. So I'd say 16,000 would be a piece of good news, not a piece of bad news, because technically it could have been up as much as 65,000 or 70,000. But you kind of got to look at those things if you're trying to make sense on a continual basis. And of course, none of them do, and that's why I come here on Saturday mornings.
And also looking at weekly numbers like that is pretty useless. You need to look at the trend. The trend is still in the right direction.
The moving averages are a lot more meaningful.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks have ticked up, but it's still near a post-pandemic low. I wouldn't get too worked up about one number.
No, me neither. Anyway, I think there's a good chance we'll get through September without too much disruption. And hopefully on to the end of the year, we still think the market looks good for the balance of this year. Hopefully we'll close out a real, real nice year following a really, really good year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if we just traded flat for the rest of the year, it would be a really good year. So
it's fine,
I'd be happy with that.
A lot of the people who are retiring, and there are a lot of them out there, if they do hit a nice period in the market, there's nothing that would be more fortunate to people who retire than just to accidentally time it where the market was going to be real good for the first year or two and build up your nest egg a little bit before you have to start drawing it down further.
The only thing that would be better would be to get a run up right before you retire, and then you retire and move everything to cash, and the Fed hiked rates so you could put it in somewhere safe and make some money.
Nice. Yeah, remember the good old days, right? I take that a little tongue in cheek, because when you're getting a lot of money for your money, you're paying a lot of money for your money too.
Yeah.
So it's always a toss up between the
suddenly
borrow and the lender.
House prices are unaffordable because you're paying 8% mortgage interest rates.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a double edged sword on many, many levels.
Yep. Well, all right, all you Bernie Madoff fans, you're going to have to wait a few minutes till we take a couple of phone calls, but I'm going to tell you some good news. Good morning, Marky, it says, I believe.
Good morning to you all, and a happy fall.
Well, thank you. You too. What's up?
Speaking about building portfolios and timing the market and all that good stuff, I'm rolling the dice as well, and regarding unfortunately, it's a small over-the-counter, which is probably a no-no already, but
yeah.
They are in the lithium business of mining lithium, and mm-hmm. they've got several patents out already, and I'm building up shares for that in, again, taking a chance or an opportunity to see if they're going to, you know, strike it rich. Like to be there with them, you know, and like to have that in the portfolio. So I'd like to see what you think about lithium.
Well, I got a couple thoughts on it. One is that certainly there's a huge demand for lithium right now, and more and more we're going into the car batteries and so on. And two is I tried to make money there once and didn't. But that was a few years ago when this whole thing just was getting started. There was an exchange-traded fund that came out for lithium. And I thought, well, heck, this is a sure thing, right? So I put some money into it, and it went down about 20% and sat there for years. So I guess you could say there should be some pent-up demand for it if you're trying to be a real optimist.
Past performance is not an exactly. indicator of future.
At past underperformance is not an indicator.
Right. No, it's one of those things that it really depends on what the rest of your financial life looks like. If you are able to take risks like that, there's probably two classes of people that are investors that are able to take those kind of risks. One are young people who don't have very much money and aren't going to be able to even put very much money into these things. If you want to take a flyer and you lose the $50 that you would have gone out, you know, partying with your friends with, whatever. The other class of investor that can afford to take those types of risk would be someone who has the rest of their financial house in order and is just doing this sort of for fun on the side. So I wouldn't recommend it to the majority of people, but if you fall into one of those two categories and you feel like this is something that has a legitimate chance of doing very well, sure, and you're not putting a huge amount of your net worth or your invested assets into it, why not?
So the logical question is, do you fit into one of those groups?
Yeah, the second one, of course.
Great.
And,
okay.
And good. Several weekend party monies involved in it. The one of the negative things that I really see is the short in Hucking that we can get.
Time.
Mark, we are having trouble. We can hardly hear you anymore. There's a lot of static on your line. If you can, call us back after the break and we can continue this, but we just can't hear. Sorry.
I really like the question, though, so call back if you can.
Yeah, I do too. Phil.
Good morning, Van Wees, Financial Guru.
Oh, you know what? I think the problem is that might be on our line.
It's on your line because it rang forever and ever, and your predecessor, the Angela and Howard, I let it ring 177 times. She didn't even receive it when it
broke. Well, the static just cleared up a little better. So,
can you hear me?
Yeah, well, you're good now, actually.
Number one, it's good to be back. God didn't take me yet, which is good.
And
I've been listening to you even from my ICU hospital bed. But
well, good. Yeah, and I was listening while you called in to Howard and Angela, too.
Oh, no, you're not supposed to hear me. Yeah, right. But anyway, good to be back. I want to take a shot at the end.
Sure.
Your question. I want to say hospitality/labor industry, including restaurants and hotels, and I'm probably off.
And that is precisely what my young friend sitting opposite me said, and it is not correct.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and it was not it.
Well, but we're on the same wavelength, yep. Okay? Let me let you go to break, and I'm going to listen, and I'll call you next week, okay?
Great, all right, Bill, thank you very much.
You know what they say, great minds think alike.
Yep. All right, we do have to take a break in just a few seconds, so I'll reiterate. Yeah, you could rephrase this and say, what job classification is it? It's considered a sector, but think that way, and it's sort of general. All right, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have our trivia questions still open. What's the second most available job title, which is otherwise known as a sector, in this country today? And we know two things. Production and manufacturing was first, and it is not hotel and restaurant or hospitality. That's about all we know. Marky, are you better?
You tell me.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's still getting a little, what sounds like wind noise.
That's okay. We'll just
We'll power unless it gets, we just couldn't hear you last time, but let's power through and carry on here.
And you've paid your phone bill, right?
Oh. Well, I don't know.
No. Yeah, no, that's, we would have to ask the radio station.
Yeah, we'll talk to the powers that be.
I better make it quick. Well, I'm not sure where you want me to pick up on the last conversation regarding that lithium company, but I'm the second version of that, where I was a fisherman of well to cast out a net, kind of blindly, if you will, and picked up, this was one of the smaller stocks I picked up. I got rid of most of them. I learned my lesson, but I did keep this one, and this is the lithium. The ticker is ENRT. And they are a mining group out of Nevada. They have the different rights, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm actually profiting in the green in most of the lots that I have purchased.
But good.
One of the headaches is the shortening of the stock, but it's hard to say where it may end up. It may end up a dead fish, or it may be something you'd mount on the wall. I don't know.
Might be GameStop. You never know.
It's hard to say.
This whole Robin Hood style, and the kids that are out there mostly messing around with these things can create a little havoc, and they're starting to, the SEC is starting to look into that, and if they declare it financial advice, there's going to be some heck to pay. It could happen. Hard to say. But that wouldn't affect this company, I would not think. And it's stock maybe, but not the company. It certainly, we can't live without the lithium if we're going to build any batteries over here, especially. So it seems to me like if you have patience and you're not going to run out of money, then why not just hold it for a while and see what happens?
Well, that's the plan. Yeah. And in your trivia question, if I may, roll the dice on this one. I'm going to say the wind power technician.
Well, that's in the mix, but it's not number two.
Okay.
But we appreciate it. So keep us posted once in a while and see how your lithium does. I'm sure everybody will be interested.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bosco.
Yeah.
Good morning.
How are you all doing?
We're great.
Good morning. Right back at you. Yeah, that really blew me away when China did what it did, you know.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just watching a gentleman who is kind of, you know, on the cutting edge as best as most people are, you know. But he was showing how to build the unit that would mine, you know, available. And he had it down to about $8 a day, you know. And, you know, and so he was going to buy a house in Washington State, move from Las Vegas. And the house is going to be filled full of these mines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at $8 a day, not knowing how, you know, the square footage of the house, I thought, man, he probably got something going here, you know, because for what he did, he lived on the street for a long time. Smart kid, though. Smart kid. Then he was doing YouTube tutorials, you know, and then he switched over to YouTube tutorials on lithium battery, how to put units together for RVs and for houses.
Mm-hmm.
And his income just went through the roof. I'm talking, you know, upwards of he just bought another $5 million house there in Las Vegas.
Oh.
Yeah, doing it just phenomenal, you know, from rags to riches.
Hmm.
There's a story here. Maybe down the road as he, you know, becomes, you know, an adult, it'd be interesting to, you know, to see what he's going to do with his talent.
Well, you know, there's nothing more certain than change. So wherever the money's being made today, you could go out 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, there'll be a lot of new opportunities in there, and a lot of the old ones will just fade away.
This is true.
Got to be cutting edge. Did you want to make a stab at our trivia?
By all means. We call it a jab in Florida, you know. You
yeah. The arm. I like it.
And I'm going to say transportation.
Another really good one, but not second.
Okay.
But good idea.
Phil helped me out there because I was going to go with what he had suggested, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's going to be interesting, though. To see
I think
what
it's
it
going to be a little you surprising when we find out.
Have a good question.
All right. We appreciate your call. Thanks.
You betcha.
All right, Bernie Madoff fans, hopefully not investors.
Fans?
Yeah, I use that term very loosely with air quotes around it. You may remember, if you've been listening to the show long enough, that the last time that the victims group got a distribution, what it amounted to was that everybody got their initial investment with Madoff back, but nobody had made a penny yet. All those artificial profits that he kept promising were coming in month after month after month. No one had made any money. Well, recently, they came up with another 548, I think it was, $568 million that are being distributed to the victims of the Ponzi scheme. Now, that represents their first profit for all of that time. One of the things I didn't realize was how many of them there are. There are 31,000 victims of Madoff's Ponzi scheme, which means in this little distribution, the average person will get a whopping $18,000.
Well, you know, I figure if you've got your principal back, you're probably pretty happy at this point.
Will Rogers said it best. I'd rather worry about the return of my money than the return on my money.
Mm-hmm.
But there is more good news. A major beneficiary of the Ponzi scheme was an investor named Jeffrey Picower. My apologies if I said his name wrong, but he has since died, and I don't think he'll be complaining. But they're going to get another $4 billion out of his estate, and that is going to change the outlook for the Madoff people considerably more than the $568 million. So it is all... It is not all lost, and there is more behind that. There will be other recoveries made as assets get sold and so on. So just thought people might want to know that if you're one of them or no one of them, I could stick my neck way out and say that help is on the way, but I think that's a little too optimistic. All right, we only got a couple minutes here. You got a short one? We needed to do the public service announcement.
That's right. Yeah. So in case you have not heard, we are actually Van Wee Financial has sponsored this event. It's called Joe's Jog for a Cure. It is a 5K race that's taking place in Nocatee on Saturday, November 27th. That is the day of the Florida State game. It is in the morning, though, so you will be able to do the race and then also go watch the game. And you can pre-burn any calories you may eat or drink later in the day.
That's called planning.
It benefits childhood cancer research, specifically the type of leukemia that took our friend's son Joe a couple of years ago. And it's a great event. I hope that if you're a runner, or even if you like to walk, it should be that time of year should be beautiful weather. Get out there, support a great cause. Registration, if you do it early enough, is only $35 for the 5K, and it benefits a really great charity.
And is it linked on our website?
It is not. Just go to joestrong.org. I do need to put a link up on our website. I will do that this week.
Okay, good. And our website again?
VanWeeFinancial.com, VanWeeFinancial. If you, it's not the most common name, but I'm sure you can find us.
Yes, and you will also be able to, if you want to make an appointment, talk about investing and financial planning and all that, you can do it right through the website. And again, you can always call our office at 904-685-1505. Also, if you have questions that you are reluctant to share with us on air, then another thing you can do is to email us at info@VanWeeFinancial.com, and we will handle them on air. We will be right back. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I might remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255, except for this one. Good morning, Al.
Good morning. I got a question about the wash rule.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't apply to IRAs or Roth IRAs, right?
Incorrect.
Well, that depends.
It depends. It overlaps into it.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. If you're selling and buying in an IRA, losses and profits don't make a bit of difference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The way they play into it, and this is something we might have done in the past, we say, you sell it in your loss account, your taxable brokerage account, but then you sort of turn around and buy it the next day in your IRA, they got onto that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Okay.
And by the way, if you're married and one person sells and the other person buys, they're onto that one too.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
But you're absolutely right if you're staying within the confines of a tax-deferred account.
So you still have to, okay, so if you just buy and sell in the tax-deferred account, it's okay.
Yep. Correct. No problem, because basis is irrelevant.
If you have a loss in a taxable account and take a loss, then you can't go over to your IRA and buy it at a lower basis, right?
Nope.
Right.
Yeah, that they... I think it was about 7 years ago they found that out and made a technical correction, shall we say.
Okay. Now, on the RMDs for this year, we skipped last year.
Right.
So the percentage just skips over that year, and you go to the next percentage, right?
Exactly. And
so
the value...
Re-evaluate the table, right? It is flip that year.
That's correct.
Yeah, exactly right. And the value is last December 31st value that it's based on.
Right.
Now, then another little thing on that. Starting January 1, the tables change. So you have to look
January 1st?
January 1st of 2022, the RMD tables all change.
Oh.
And you have to take out less every year. So make sure you switch over to the new number, but you do it the same way. It'll be this year's December 31 value and next year's table, and it will help a little bit.
Yeah, it's actually a good change. So.
It is a great change. It would have been done this year, but they got it to the IRS too late to change the forms and such, so they delayed it a year.
I got it. Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
A pleasure. You want to take a shot at the trivia?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so. I just tuned in about maybe 20 minutes ago. I was kind of doing something else, and I got behind.
It's sort of the number two demand job in the whole country right now, and I don't think anybody's going to be surprised when they find out, but I don't know of anybody who would have thought of it. So
the number
hang
two
on.
Demand job would be probably...
I'll tell you what it's not. It's not hospitality.
Right.
It's not transportation.
Right.
And it's not wind power technician or anything to do with that industry. So those have been guessed already.
How about retail?
Good guess.
Another good guess, but no. Although speaking of retail, if you want to count Amazon, the e-retail, they're hiring 125,000 people in the remainder of this year at $18 an hour to start.
So
it's not a... That makes you wonder, how many of this other one are out there? And I don't know that half of the answer. But keep listening, you'll find out.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the advice.
Sure.
Absolutely.
We appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Oh, another one coming in, huh? Well, hang on just a second. There are occasional stories published in the financial media that are nothing more, nothing less than trying to justify some usually political thing that's going on. I'm going to get to that if we have a moment after we take this call. I don't have a name. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning. Name's Jim.
Hey, Jim. How's things?
Hey, good morning. Oh, pretty good.
Good.
I'd like to just take a shot at your trivia.
Oh, good.
Sure.
I think it's financial.
And another very good one, but no. Unfortunate.
Okay.
Good try.
We appreciate it.
Call
keep listening.
Next week.
We'll let
thank
it.
You.
Uh-huh. Appreciate it. Thanks. Okay, we got that. I've got Jim on this one, too, but this is probably not Jim, right?
Yeah, this is Jim.
Oh, two okay. Jims?
Another Jim.
Okay, good. That was a little rare being back-to-back. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a question on a high-flying stock that's up like 20%.
Okay, what is it?
In the last month. It's InMode. It's Aesthetics. With the Alinda Evangelista nightmare story about her body sculpting.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think I should dip out?
I saw that, and I don't know if the other models were also affected by this, but they've come out in support of her. That was a little scary if you're in that business. I don't know how true it is, or I can't speak to that, but yeah, that's the kind of news you don't want to hear as a stockholder.
Exactly. It's just been such a high flyer. I think I might just dip out.
It may not be a bad time. I who knows, but if you want to err on the side of caution, you're probably thinking along the right lines.
One of the oldest sayings in the book, there's no bad profits.
Yeah, and do you all have any perspective on ASML Holdings?
ASML?
No, I'm not sure what they are.
I don't know that ticker off the top of my head. No. What is it?
It's sort of a play on the semiconductor industry. Without them, nothing can be built, from what I've determined.
Gotcha. I buy SMH, which is the ETF that tracks the industry sometimes for myself and for clients. It's a good exchange-traded fund. Mm-hmm. I don't know about ASML, though, so I can't comment on that.
But the concept of being in the semis right now is a good one.
Yeah,
I agree.
the driver of most things these days. So
and they're scarce.
High-demand industry.
Right now. And you can only imagine how many plants are being built, how many production lines are going to go into business, and how much money is about to be made in there. I think you got to be there in some way, shape, or form for the future here.
Especially with that big building they're building out in Arizona. So
Arizona's a really big one, and there are two, I believe, going up in Washington that are going to be awfully large, too.
Wow. Awesome.
It's pretty hard to go wrong. Now, I like the concept of not buying the individual stocks in it. I really love the ETF that is involved in that, because there's going to be winners and there's going to be big winners and all of that. So, like we always do, keep it diversified.
I appreciate it very much. I got to go. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, semiconductors are the sort of the barometer nowadays of what lies ahead. It used to be transportation was the thing everybody looked at. It makes sense. You know, more goods are moving. The market's going to be good.
Still is. Transports haven't gone away.
No, we still like it.
Sort of got a new leader in that.
Yeah. If you think about this, we not that many years ago, when you got computer chips, they were in your computer. Now look at everything you own.
Cars, phones.
Cars have
tablets,
sometimes hundreds of them.
TVs, you name it. Refrigerators, toasters. Yeah. I mean, they're in everything.
The smart things here and there all have them, and more smart things are happening all the time. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How are
you? Great. What's happening?
All right. I know time's running short. I'm going to give a quick guess.
Sure.
All right. I'm going to say information technology services.
That is a great guess.
It really is a good guess.
But it's not it.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for bringing that up, though. I think it's a really good idea. I think almost everything we've heard today is probably in the top 10 or 20, but nobody's quite nailed the second one yet, which is, of course, why I bring it up. All right. Take care of yourself.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Yeah, that's a real good guess, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, the White House decided it was going to once again, try to pull the wool over our eyes and play like there's a big problem out there. Well, they did a study. It was just released. It says the ultra-wealthy pay an 8.2% tax rate. That's the White House report. Well, we all know that's not true. Nobody pays an 8.2% tax rate because the lowest rate is 10. So I dug into it, and here's how they do it. They added up the unrealized capital gains of all of the rich people's holdings. So if their stocks were up and their houses were up and on was up, they added in the unrealized gain, which is not taxable, of course, until you sell it. And that's how they got it. A quick one from Pat. We got a few seconds. Pat?
Hello, yes.
Yeah, you want to take a quick shot?
Nurse practitioner?
Another good guess, but no. The actual answer, in fact, I'll tell you right on air, it's HR people. Human resources is where the big jobs are right now. Interesting, yeah.
Okay. My theory about that. Thanks for the call. My theory about that is that more companies need a scapegoat. I mean, they really need someone to manage all their
exactly.
employees.
Nobody wants to do it. They want to hire it out. All right, it's been fun today. Thanks to all who called, and we will see you next